It's the Central Coast's classic rock.
First thing in the morning and pretty much all day long
I listen at work.
93.3 KZOZ rocks.
Hey, George, it's Suzanne here at KZOZ. How's it going?
We're sneaking by.
Nice, nice. You probably see a bazillion faces over the years, but I actually met you out here in Paso Robles at the California Mid-State Fair a handful of years back with some winners from this exact radio station here at KZOZ.
Well, it must have went well. You're still speaking to me.
Yeah. I'm good. As a matter of fact, like when I work at the fair every year, I get these like ID badges so I can, you know, move about the cabin. And you sign the back of it. So like I carry that with me every year at the California Mid-State Fair.
Oh yeah, I remember you now.
Yeah. We were so stoked to meet you that day, and then lo and behold, here you are all these years later coming back to rock the main stage with ZZ Top on the 25th.
Well, as much as I try to duck these kind of things, I sit there and then the phone rings and I'll say, oh, yeah, Billy F. Gibbons. You know, Billy F. Gibbons has a card printed up that says, Billy F. Gibbons, friend of Eric Clapton.
Well,
so I'm going to get a card. I'm going to get a card printed up saying George Thorogood, friend of Billy F. Gibbons.
Nice. You can put my name on there, too. You're a friend of mine now. Well, we're happy to have you back. California Mid-State Fair, Grandstand Arena Stage, July 25th. It's George Thorogood. You bringing the Destroyers with you?
Always. I sure hope so.
Yeah, right. Hopefully they'll show up.
They better show up.
Can we talk about this a little bit, get into the history, just in case someone hasn't caught up on the whole thing, because with the Destroyers, I mean, this dates back to young George out in Delaware with a buddy from high school. Talk about that a little bit. And I think this guy's still with you to this day, correct?
Yeah, we were both. He was actually a few years behind me. His brother and I went to the same school.
Gotcha.
And quite naturally, you know, we hung out a lot. And Jeff, who was a few years younger than us, was kind of tagged along with us. And his brother turned him on to really super music at an early age. The best music that was happening at the time, the Allman Brothers, Johnny Winter, the Mothers of Invention, things like that. And so he was very well educated in things, but he had little or no experience as a musician. And I kind of had a few years ahead of him playing the guitar. So when I finally decided to have a band, we had jammed a couple times. And Jeff's knowledge of what I was doing or trying to do was right on, spot on. He knew exactly what I was doing and exactly what was needed. And I didn't have a drummer, but I needed one. I said, well, then you're going to be the drummer. and he was like, well, I don't play. And I said, well, you can learn.
Figure it out.
I can't teach you the education you've had as far as knowing what the good stuff is, what the right stuff is.
Right.
You can always go get someone to teach you to play the drums, but I can't teach you the attitude. I can't do what your brother already set up for you.
Absolutely.
You already know what the thing is. It's just going to take a little bit of time and experience for you to get this thing together, and it did. But we both had the right idea at the same time. I was just a few years ahead of him, so
gotcha.
He caught up quick.
So then when you guys started the Delaware Destroyers, I mean, it's you and Jeff Simon, and you kind of obviously added some people along the way to really build out that band that you called the Delaware Destroyers. Now to this day, we know as the Destroyers.
Well, actually, it was at we always were that, just the Destroyers. And we happened to be playing at a wedding reception, of all things. And, you know, you take any gigs you can, you know, when you're starting out.
Of course.
Anybody gives you, even if they give you a free sandwich or a hamburger or something, you say, well, you got a band, you know. So they hired us to do this. And there was a guy who was a friend of mine in high school, was also a musician. He played a harmonica. And he kept announcing us on the stage as the Delaware Destroyers. And he was acting like, you know, we were the Rolling Stones or something. It was really, the guy was great. And he kept saying it, you know, just 15 minutes left and the Delaware Destroyers will be right back, you know, like, and it was pretty cool.
He set
it up pretty good.
You got to have that hype, man.
Yeah, he believed it because he played the same music I did, except for he played a harmonica.
Right.
And I played the guitar. But it stuck, you know. And then once we got rolling. So we can't fit all that on the marquee. You know, it'd be great to have a name like ZZ Top or The Who, you know, but they were taken.
Right.
So we ended up with what we got.
Hey, I think it's a good name. George Thorogood and the Destroyers, and these guys are coming through. California Mid-State Fair, July 25th. ZZ Top going to be on stage that night as well. We are so pumped here on the Central Coast to welcome you guys back onto that stage. When we talk about, like, your history, I mean, you really, you know, you started out in the 70s and your, you know, your first record back in 77. So you really came up in, like, the era of the vinyl, and that kind of ties into something nowadays where, you know, your recent thing where you are re-releasing some of your best stuff on vinyl right now.
Well, everybody is.
Yeah.
We're not alone there. But we were the first ones to do that, or one of the very first that did that. Years ago, we put out a record called The Dirty Dozen, and one of the first people we gave that record to, that was back in 2009, and people were just starting to do that again, and we did it with Capitol. One of the first people we gave that record to was Bob Dylan,
nice.
Of all people.
Cool.
Yeah, and he stood and looked at it, and he just turned it over, and he was dead on into it. Yeah, he didn't even listen to the music yet, and he was like, "God, a real record." That's how he said it. Real record.
Yeah, right. Haven't seen that in a while.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, and that, you know, I don't say we you know, were any kind of trailblazers, but we were one of the first to do that, and you know, and then the kids buy it, you know, and they say it's something so old it's new.
Totally. You know? Yeah, you know, it's funny
it
too.
Sounds better. It sounds better on vinyl anyway, because vinyl is soft.
Absolutely.
And Neil Young said something interesting. He said he thought when people listen to CDs, they're easier to carry around, they're easier to make, but it's a metallic sound. And he said the metallic sound hits the bone just below your eardrum. So you're hearing that first, and it's a harsh sound.
Mm-hmm.
Your eardrum is soft, like vinyl is soft. So when it's on vinyl, you're hearing a gentler thing on your eardrum.
Wow.
Well, Neil's pretty hip about a lot of things. He might have something there.
Yeah, no, that's a cool way to put it. I've actually never seen that quote, but that's a perfect way to explain it. I love that.
Yeah.
So just to plug it, though, you did three essential albums. They're out on vinyl now. And you went back to 82's Bad to the Bone.
Mm-hmm.
You got the 88 Born to Be Bad. And then you did this Greatest Hits, 30 Years of Rock. And that was actually not on vinyl until now, right?
Yeah, I like the albums now. I like them better than the CDs because, Suzanne, I'll tell you this, I like them because it's easier to have sign autographs.
Yeah.
On it. I mean, I have a big name,
yes.
You know, and I can never fit it on the CD. So when you have the albums, like, oh, I got great, plenty of room for the autograph.
That's so funny because, you know, harken back to that little tiny name badge that you signed for me. That was like really cramming it in there. So that's cool though. And then, you know, from the 70s and you move through the 80s with, you know, not missing a beat right into like the MTV era, which, you know, I grew up on a lot of that stuff. And you look back at like the history of your videos and stuff. Do you have a favorite video that you did for MTV back in the day?
I probably just like the first one we did because it was so new and it was an interesting concept. You know, that the time came on, it became like, well, before you even put the album out or made an album, they would say, well, what's the video? I go,
right.
Wait a minute.
You could have a whole
minute.
Thing.
Yeah, so the idea is to make a record and then say, hey, this song might make a good video.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the whole industry turned around, and it was like the video came first, and you had to write or create a song that was right for video. Well, that was kind of like putting the horse, the cart before the horse.
Right.
To me. So MTV was in its infancy then. It was on 24 hours. Everybody was watching it. It was like people watched TV in 1952.
Right.
It was a new medium, so to speak.
Absolutely.
So the early ones, maybe like the first one, we did a song called Nobody But Me, and they hired a bunch of kids from a school like they have in the movie Fame, young kids who were learning to do things in entertainment.
Cool.
And it was done in London, and that was kind of special. And we were just starting out with EMI America. So, you know, time went on. It was just like, I don't really want to do this anymore. You know, but I have to say this. I have to own up and say it this way. This band was very fortunate that we hit FM radio just as it was stopping. We had MTV in its infancy. We got in on that. Then we got in on the House of Blues chain. Then we got in on when classic rock started. So this is a band that was in the right place at the right time. Don't ask me how. We didn't plan it that way.
Just sheer luck.
It just something came along, and we had the right songs that fit, you know, what was happening at the time.
Absolutely.
So that when I heard classic rock start, and I was, you know, driving down the road one day, and I was heard Bourbon, Scotch, and Beer on classic rock radio. So I said, okay, well, I'm on the radio, classic rock, big station, Los Angeles. I want to see what they have to say. So I parked the car, and after the song was over, the DJ came on and said, well, that was a block of Hendrix, Clapton, and Thorogood. I went, what? Wait a minute. Hold the phone.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to think, holy smokes, George, you better start taking this thing a little more serious.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just rolling along, you know, just hoping to get a gig.
Totally.
Like any part of my life.
And so
when these things started to happen, I was just like, but I think the thing we fell into, classic rock radio, that was the one. That was, that's kept us all going.
Yeah, well, we're still here for you, man.
Well, when was the last time people didn't hear Rockin' Me Baby by Steve Miller Band on the radio?
Right.
When was the last time you didn't hear it? You know, if you told the world that you were never going to play Jumpin' Jack Flash anymore, there'd be a riot.
Yeah, no, we cannot. You know? The dude does not abide that.
Exactly. So that's what it's all about, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's, hey, man, if someone wants to lump me in with Hendrix and Clapton, I'll take it.
Right. And I mean, these are dudes that you grew up listening to and idolizing and kind of coming up on, right?
Well, of course. Yeah. I mean, when you lumped in the people that, you know, I stood in line to see Hendrix play, and I stood in line to see Eric. We'd get there real early, you know, like 2 or 3 in the afternoon to stand next to the club and so we could see, you know, Eric Clapton pull up, and what kind of clothes was he wearing?
Right.
Or Jimi Hendrix would come in, and he'd have these wild clothes on, you know, and you know, about 40 women with him, you know, he's this bad guitar. Well, we were fans too, you know, that did all that. So when I get into these places and I get to play with Steve Miller or get to play with Billy F. Gibbons, who's a friend of Eric Clapton's, you know, it's I got to kind of pinch myself, but at the same time say, well, make sure you get plenty of sleep. You got to do a great show, man. You're being lumped in with the big boys.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you don't mind, I tossed it out. I was like, hey, if you know, on our Facebook for our fans and our listeners and things like that, and our KZOZ family, and said, hey, if you were going to talk to George Thorogood, what would you ask? And I wanted to toss a couple of these out. And you mentioned, you know, bourbon, scotch, beer. And Tammy just wanted to know, if you had to choose, which would it be? You going to do one bourbon, one scotch, or one beer?
You mean the song?
Or
itself?
Just, I think she's leading you toward, like, which one do you want to drink?
I'd advise everybody to stay away from all three of them. Just listen to the song.
Okay. That was a fun one. It's also like Kyle, he says, can I have a drink with you? And I just thought it was funny. Evan replied, he drinks alone. So I think we kind of answered that one. But this one was cool. And this is from John Rohde. And he wanted to know what you learned from Hound Dog Taylor when you were a roadie for him in the early 70s.
Well, let's just set that straight. I was never a roadie for
him. Okay,
good.
I
was a big fan.
Fact checking.
Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to play opening for Hound Dog when I was a solo act.
Cool.
And they took a shine to me.
Is that when you were doing? Sorry to interrupt you there. Just you started out doing solo kind of acoustic stuff, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so
correct.
This is like in those days.
Yes.
Okay.
And I had seen Hound Dog play a year before, but only like one song at a festival. And this was my first upfront, you know, encounter with this act. And they absolutely blew me away. They were like the blues version of The Who.
Nice.
You know, just, oh my God, the
loud.
Power. And the, but good and loud.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Not like, you know, like loud. It's like, I can't stand that. Yeah, they were loud. Yes. But they, I mean, these people, they outdrew or drew as much as Muddy Waters or Howling Wolf or anybody.
Awesome.
And so when I was watching them, what I learned from them was, like I was saying, listen, George, you're never going to be able make people forget Miles Davis as a musician. As far as the songwriter goes, there's only one Bob Dylan. So when I saw what Hound Dog did, and then Jeff showed up, I said, we're going to have a band like this. And he also taught me, he said, watch Hound Dog. Look what he's doing. Look how much fun he's having.
Mm-hmm.
He's having so much fun. Look how much fun people are having watching him. It wasn't like the usual people sitting there in a temple watching a great blues god,
right.
You know, like they did in those days. And most of the people that came to see Hound Dog Taylor were young people, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21 years old. And more than half of them were girls, not women, girls. And they freaked out over the guy. And they never had to do a thing. When he came back to Boston area, they would just put an ad in the paper that would say, The Return of the Dog.
Nice.
Now, that's a legend. Now, that's a legend right there.
Absolutely.
And his style was so close to mine, or vice versa. I said, see, you don't have to be a musical genius to make it, to be successful. What you got to do is have something people enjoy and want to see. Even if you're not, you know, a Rhodes Scholar at music, you know, or you went to Berklee School of Jazz or something.
Totally.
And I learned that off of those guys when I watched them play. And I don't think anybody enjoyed being on stage as much as Alan. He'd walk into a club and he'd walk in, and you could hear people in the crowd going, Hound Dog, Hound Dog, Hound Dog. And his two guys in his band would go right to the bar, and Hound Dog would go right to the bandstand immediately. He'd still have his overcoat on.
That is so cool. That's
yeah.
It's
here's
cool.
A guy that's never late for work.
Yeah, right. And it's cool that, you know, you coming up and seeing someone like that, and just it's cool. And for fans, you know, when you're on the stage and you're enjoying yourself, we reciprocate that. You know, it's all love when stuff like that's going down on stage. And I think you bring that. You and the Destroyers there. We're talking with George Thorogood. Just a couple minutes left here. I wanted to let you know we're doing this thing with our KZOZ family here called the KZOZ Front Row Boogie. And we're giving away front row tickets to see you guys at the California Mid-State Fair on July 25th. We're bringing everyone down to our farmer's market event here in San Luis Obispo next week. And we are making them do like a freeze dance game. So, you know, music's on, they dance. Music's off, they freeze.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to ask you about this. Like, any tips or tricks for the KZOZ Front Row Boogie for our KZOZ fam here? Or maybe what's your go-to dance move?
The song you want to play for whatever occasion that needs to be heard for, you know, the situation you just talked about.
Yeah.
Or anything. The song you got to play is a song called Taylor's Rock by Hound Dog Taylor and the House Rockers. I write this down, Taylor's Rock.
I am totally writing that down right now.
Your life will not be the same after you hear it.
That's rad. We will definitely put that in our playlist at the Front Row Boogie. That's awesome. Thank you for that.
You got it.
Let me ask you one more before you go, because I just can't stop talking. Tell us something that got you into trouble when you were growing up.
I'm sorry?
Tell us a little fun fact about something that got you into trouble when you were growing up, because I know we all know you are bad to the bone.
I was... My parents are fond of saying this, the only kid we have who's never given us any trouble. the only trouble I got when I was a kid was they were always, not always, but sending me home to get a haircut. Because it was a conservative Delaware, and, you know, I wanted to look like one of the Rolling Stones, you know. every kid did, you know.
Absolutely.
So that was really the only trouble I got, really. And that really wasn't trouble. That was just more of an attitude and a cosmetic thing. And
right.
I say, look, man, I don't want to look like Dobie Gillis, man. You know, I want to look like Keith Richards. Come on,
absolutely.
You know, is that such a big deal? You know, and that was gym teachers didn't like me, man.
Yeah,
they didn't go for my act at all.
Yeah. Awesome. Well,
I hate to disappoint you now. You want to talk about trouble? You talk to my two older brothers.
There we go.
They're the guys to talk. There's the guys to talk to.
Hey, you want to throw them under the bus? I'm here, man.
Yeah, well, you.
Anyway, that was George Thorogood hanging out with us here at KZOZ. Really appreciate you spending some time with us. And, you know, we got a little carried away with the conversation, but I did want to mention, like, you just put out your first solo album ever last year, Party of One. Are we going to hear some of that on stage at the fair as well?
Absolutely not. I get there, it's going to be a full-on rock. Rock and roll never sleeps. It just passes out.
Right on, man. Well, we're looking forward to it. We'll see you on the 25th, George.
Our pleasure. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.